emergency room visits are skyrocketing from the use of dangerous energy drinks. Are you next in line, suffering from fatigue, tiredness, or seeking peak performance? Real energy.
Real.
My fatigue was obliterated with a groundbreaking new product called Alta Rush. I feel the rush, and the best part is I've got real energy for peak performance. Alta Rush cracked the code to energy. Recently published studies show that ingredients found together only in Alta Rush increased energy an average of 45% in patients with chronic fatigue, and athletes experienced a 40% increase in stamina. Now that's energy. Visit AltaRush.com, AltaRush.com, AlterRush.com. Free trial samples are available for a limited time. Get moving again with Alta Rush, AlterRush.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. Not intended to treat, diagnose, prevent, or cure disease. Results may vary.
Hey, y'all, are you looking for Corella? Some chocolate superfood with organic vanilla. Food-based vitamins keep you a healthy fella. Use your wife's credit card, don't even have to tell her. Go to Natural News Store, that's what it's there for. Get your superfoods, herbs, and a lot more. Feel young like you did before, and let Mother Nature's medicine work it like it's there for. I know you care for your health, therefore. Don't eat those GMOs, throw them out the back door. Don't stay poor with your diet if it's killing you. Enjoy your life with nutrition that's filling you. We got freeze-dried fruit that's organic. Super clean, super foods, best on the planet. Blueberry, strawberry, even pomegranate. Yeah, it's ready to ship, and if you buy it, you can have it. Yeah, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Check out store.naturalnews.com for all your organic supplements and superfoods. Or call 888-959-6415. That's 888-959-6415 to order now. Coconut, maca, spirulina, goji berry, superfood protein.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring.
Welcome. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with vaccine rights researcher and author Dr. Sherry Tenpenny and vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, now proudly sponsored by the Natural Farm Source in tribute to the late Dr. Mayor Eisenstein. Go to homefirst.com, click on the store button for vitamin A, vitamin C, probiotics, and other natural supplements to help you stay healthy naturally. We are live Monday evenings on blogtalkradio.com at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, 7 Mountain, and 6 Pacific Times. Proudly rebroadcast at naturalnewsradio.com Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Central, 11 a.m. Mountain, and 10 a.m. Pacific times. We welcome your calls during the live show. That number is area code 646-478-0772. That number again, area code 646-478-0772. And if you want to make a contribution, ask a question, add a comment, be sure and press 1. Because that lights up a little question mark on the screen for us, and we know that you're not just calling in to listen by phone, but that you actually want to talk to us. And you can email us during the week. Those email addresses are Dr. Tenpenny, that's drtenpenny@gmail.com, drtenpenny@gmail.com, and attorney@vaccinerights.com. This is somewhere, give or take, March 9th, 2015. I'm Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips. Sherry, how are you doing this evening?
Well, it's been another long week, hasn't it?
You know, I'm semi-coherent at least, and I'm here, and I'm just going to leave it at that. It just keeps flying by and piling
up. Yeah,
on.
I think that, yes, it really has been really long. I had a really interesting weekend, Alan. I drove from Cleveland to Lansing, Michigan, which is about 3 hours and 45 minutes away, and I went to a one-day training hosted by the Foundation for Conservative Leadership. And it was excellent. It was probably one of the best days that I've ever spent in terms of learning something about the political process and how we can more strongly make a difference in the activism that we're doing. So it was really quite good. If anybody is on those alerts that they send out, to go to the training was a one-day training. It was $40. It was not even expensive, and it was worth far more than that. It's Campaign for Liberty, and they go around the country and they host these talks to talk to you about what politics really is and what's the difference between power politics and access power politics and how to use limited resources for the biggest bang for the buck to get political things changed. So it was really quite good, and I really want to put in a plug for them because the training was good. And the trainers, they actually said that if anyone could guarantee 25 people in a room, they would send a trainer out to put them through this full day. It was a full 8.5-hour day of training. In fact, when we had breaks, we took the breaks in the room, and when we had lunch, we all went out, got a little buffet, and came back in the room. And so Campaign for Liberty, if you can sign up for their alerts, it's free. It's campaignforliberty.com. And the training was only $40, and like I said, 25 people, if you put 25 people in the room, for all the people who've been listening to us for the last several weeks and in their own state battles with their state legislators, I really strongly advocate for this and say it would be an incredibly good use in money.
That sounds terrific, Sherry. Is there by any chance any examples or tips or hints that you got that you could share? Give us at least a little tease here about what you get in that day. Obviously, you can't condense 8 hours into 5 minutes, but...
Well, I think that one of the most important takeaways that I got was that, you know, they say, and we all know this is true, there's limited time and there's limited money and limited resources. And they said that activist groups are always underfunded and that you absolutely have to find a way to set up an entity and raise the money. Even if it's a few thousand dollars, that you need things for mailers and robocalls and postage and writing letters and, you know, different things like that. I mean, you can't do this just on air. And I think that's been one of the problems that we've had in the vaccine people all along is a bit of a lack of organization and a way to raise money. I mean, I've said this before, you know, the other side has Bill Gates. They have $1 billion from Gavi. They have the CDC. They have every public health department and every professional medical organization puts money behind them. And somehow we feel like we can be successful just because we exist and we think we know the truth. And they made a really big deal about that is really not the case. And the second biggest thing I think I took away from was that they talked about doing what they call a five-column analysis, which means you take your bills, if you go to nvicadvocacy.org, and you look at the bills that are trying to be passed in your state, and you take one at a time, and you take that bill, and you do this in a spreadsheet format that down the left-hand column of the page, you write the name of each one of your representatives, and you put the district that they're in, because that's really important. That's the next phase I'll talk about. But you put the legislators down the left-hand side of the page, and across the top, you write +2, +1, 0, -1, -2. And you give them a score based on how you feel they will vote, meaning voting the way you want them to vote, which means voting yes for certain bills and no for certain bills, because they said that you have to train your legislators to be kind of like Pavlov's dogs. They are here to do what you want them to do, we go at them sort of like begging them to please do it, and that's access politics, that's not power politics. So when you look down the left-hand column and you look at the legislators and you can say plus two, you put a little check mark that says, yes, I'm pretty sure that they will vote no on this bill. And the next one down, you know, I'm really sure, like, I know how they are based on what they voted on before. And the next legislator down becomes a minus two, means that they're like Barbara Baxter and these people out in California, or Boxer, I mean, that no matter what, you know, Jesus could walk on water in front of them and they're not going to believe it, and they're not going to change their mind because their pockets are loaded with pharmaceutical money. So you might as well not even waste your time. So you kind of negate the plus two and the minus two people on your column from spending any time with them, because you're either going to be preaching to a stone wall or you're going to be preaching to the choir. The people that you really need to target with your message are the plus ones or the zeros. They're the ones, the new zeros are like, they're clueless. They don't have any idea about this issue. They could be swayed either way. The plus ones are people that, you know, that they may not understand the vaccine issue, but they do get the issue about personal rights. And those are the people that you need to target with your information and get the information out them to them continuously, because they are the ones that you can get, they are more likely to get to sway the way you want them to vote. And I thought that that was really important because I don't think that we have done that much of a targeted approach before. The other thing that they said that is in your individual state, and if you are, say, in District 13, you want to be targeting your representatives from District 13, because if you're from District 20, your District 13 representatives really don't care. They don't give a rip about what you say, because you're not going to raise money for them and you're not a vote for them. So you know, just to do a splattering across the board of all these people, they have so much is coming into their inbox, they don't really care. But if your representative is in District 13 and you're from District 13 and they are a plus one, they are the ones that you absolutely need to target and go after.
Sherry, this sounds just fantastic. It reminds me of something that Don Richardson of the NVIC Advocacy Portal has said in the past in a slightly less, I think, detailed way, but she has said, check your state representative's voting record on any sort of similar or related kind of legislation in the past to see if you can get a feel for who are the ones who are going to be receptive or likely to be supportive. So in I think, a less precise way, was saying a very similar concept, at least with respect to your point there. This is really great information, because I think I know we have a growing number of people who are concerned about vaccines. I hope that means we have a growing number of people who are willing to be legislatively active. But the vast majority of us really don't know what to do beyond that. And, you know, writing a letter, sending an email, maybe it's better than nothing, but I think there's a lot more than just sort of doing that as an isolated individual that we can do to be more effective. So this is terrific information, terrific advice. It really sounds like a great program.
And I think that one of the things that we've been amiss, and I know that I would have made the same mistake. I mean, I would have just made a list of Ohio representatives if this was an issue in Ohio, and thankfully right now it's not. But they advised me when I was there, they said, don't wait until it is an issue. Take a proactive stance and go figure out who would, if that came up, who would be voting the way that you want them to vote. And if they're not, make the same five-column analysis and go after them with information right now, because they said, believe me, the other side is. And so I would have just made a list of people in Ohio, and I would have just gone down the list and called all of them, you know, just because I thought, well, they need to know from people in Ohio. But I'm telling you, I'm from Cleveland. The people from Cincinnati really don't care what I think. You know, because I don't attack them one way or another. I'm not going to go door-to-door and campaign for them. I'm not going to try to raise money for them. I'm not going to vote for them or vote against them, which is the other thing they talked about, is that you have to give them a bit of a threat of saying, if you don't vote for me, if you don't vote yes on this bill or however you want them to vote, then you kind of do a veiled threat of saying, you know, I have a lot of friends who support me on this, and if you don't do this, then I'm going to tell all my friends when you come up for election that you're not the guy for us. Because all they really care about is money and votes, and this is the way to do a targeted campaign to get people on board for what the way you want them to vote. Instead of just doing a shotgun approach, this was a very strategic approach.
It sounds like really, really good advice, Sherry. So thanks for sharing that. You know, I think another thing that people can keep in mind is that all of us have the ability to act and potentially make a difference as individuals, but there may also be ways that at least some of us can cooperate as groups. So, you know, the California Chiropractic Association, for example, has a position on the bill in California, and they are members of that organization are communicating with their representatives, but not only as individuals, but as an organization. And so there may be ways that we could, as an alternative community, could assess amongst ourselves what are some of the groups or organizations that, as groups or organizations, would be willing or take a position that would support, you know, our position on some of these bills. So that might be something else that folks could keep in mind. Sherry, we have already got the phones lighting up here. How about we take some of these calls early in the show tonight so we don't get stuck running out of time, which we tend to do later on in the show.
I think that would be awesome. I think that would be great.
All right, we've got somebody, if I know my area codes, and there are, gosh, hundreds of them now, it seems like, maybe from Florida, area code 239, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, it's Shalom. And
Shalom, how are you doing this evening?
I wanted to ask you about, this is regarding a vaccine injury. So we have a child that we think was injured. Child with severe allergies that led to gastrointestinal problems, esophagitis. And we contacted a lawyer through you, Carol Gallagher, and she looked at the history and she agrees with us. She thinks our child was vaccine injured. That's just a question of finding a doctor willing to testify. We went to the gastroenterologist, the pediatric gastroenterologist that diagnosed him, and well, he told us he really doesn't know anything about vaccines because he didn't learn much about it in medical school, and he told us that he doesn't mind answering any questions that the court has, but if the court would ask him if he thinks our child is injured by a vaccine, he would have to answer no, and he admitted to us because he's scared of what would happen. You know, this. He's afraid the same thing that happened to another pediatric gastroenterologist is going to happen to him. So my question is, so what are we supposed to do if our own doctor is afraid to testify? How are we going to find someone that could testify instead?
Well, one of the problems is there's so few people, so few physicians who are willing to get into this ring. I mean, and I know why. It's very long, it's hard, it's time-consuming. It's kind of a rigged court. So, and you can't just go out and hire someone. It was my experience when I testified in court three or four times that the patient, it had to be my patient, my physical patient, for me to make the diagnosis and be able to go and testify for them. So it wouldn't be like, you know, you can just hire somebody from anywhere. So it becomes a challenge. I don't know, Alan, what's been your experience with that?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind to me is to check with some other vaccine injury attorneys and ask them if they have any suggestions on where you can find someone. I'm not sure, Sherry, and I honestly don't know.
Can I just say that Carol Gallagher,
yeah,
really spent the most time with us from all of them. I would highly recommend her to anybody because she really went out on a limb. She spent hours on the phone with us, talking to us, and this is where we're headed. We're holding now.
But it would seem to me that the attorneys that have been in this business the longest would be the ones most likely to have the largest network of doctors. Sherry, I don't know. I think certainly the ideal would be someone who is the child's actual doctor, but I'm not sure that it would be unhelpful for someone who's an expert on a particular arena to be able to look at medical records and offer a professional opinion from that. But that gets a little bit beyond my level of insight because it's not something that I do in my own practice. But I'll put it as a question because I honestly don't know. But I don't know why it wouldn't be appropriate for the proper expert in a particular field to look at the medical record and offer an opinion based on that. But it would certainly be ideal.
No,
Ideal to have. Well, have you testified in vaccine injury cases, or are you talking about other kinds of cases?
No, I'm talking about vaccine court, Ninth District.
Because,
I've been there.
Because
more than once.
Because I don't understand how a doctor can testify at all unless they're a qualified expert, you know, in the particular related area. So, but I'm outside of my arena here, so. You know, I would say, you know, the best thing I know for the question is to check with other injury attorneys and ask them, you know, if they can point you in a direction that would help.
I can tell you how it went.
Please.
Okay, because you know, the first thing that the opposing team tries to do whenever you're in litigation, because I hate litigation and I won't do it anymore, is that they try to disqualify the witness. So the first thing they go through and say is go through every single thing. Have you done research in vaccines? Do you work at a university institution? What is your relationship with vaccine industries? And what makes you think you're a qualified expert about anything that has to do with vaccines? And then, you know, so they go through that whole thing. And then the side that I was on says, well, she's a qualified expert in being a physician, and this particular patient happened to be her patient, and so therefore she's qualified to testify about what she believes happened to her patient, and that was the only way that the judge would let it through without disqualifying
the bottom
expert
line.
And so
that just validates what I said, Sherry, is that you've got to have, if you have a qualified expert, then you get outside of the arena that you are limited to, because if you're not an expert in, and I'll give an example. I don't know if these are the literal correct answers, but for example, if you're not an epidemiologist or a virologist or an immunologist, something you know like of that nature, if you don't have those kinds of areas of specialization, then you would not be able to become a qualified expert to testify against the efficacy or safety of vaccines in a more general sense. See, I'm not trying to pin this to vaccine injury specifically because I'm not sure what exactly that arena needs to be qualified as an expert. But you have to go with medical testimony generally, you have to get beyond just having the MD or in your case DEO behind your name. You have to have the area of specialization that's relevant to whatever the testimony is. So it does make sense when you clarify that for me now that you could testify as to your own patients about, you know, with your expertise in whatever it is that you're seeing those patients about. But if you're testifying about vaccine injury to qualify, you might need a different specialization to qualify. And if you then are qualified as an expert, then you could testify, I'm sure, pretty sure, to based just on your examination of the medical records.
Okay.
If that patient was your patient, it couldn't be that I could just examine somebody else's medical records and testify with that. They would not allow that.
Right, because you do not have the right area of specialization to qualify as a legal expert,
right.
As an expert in court.
Just,
but somebody else who does have the right qualifications could do that.
And there aren't very many of us in the vaccine arena. I mean, there aren't many.
You're absolutely
many doctors,
right, because
you know? Yeah.
Because when you do that, as our callers point out, when a doctor does that, they risk retaliation within their own profession, and so it's really difficult. But the best thing I know to tell you is to check with some other vaccine lawyers, injury attorneys, and see if they can point you to some people who do this, because there probably are a small number of people, although maybe it's a shrinking number, people who, you know, who testify in this area, and I would look for those experts through the other attorneys who have worked with him and so know who they are.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Well, wish you the best of luck with that. It's always heart-wrenching to hear
it's
that somebody
really
has the problems. and then just all the harder when they're struggling. You know, it's just salt in the wound, so to speak, to deal with it in the first place and then see that compounded or exacerbated by problems like this. I tell you, Sherry, in some ways, this is such a dark issue that anybody would ever, any medical professional would not be able to freely express their opinion or freely testify or freely, you know, come to their own conclusions in any aspect of this issue without facing the risk of retaliation. Is just so reprehensible. So
reprehensible is a really good word, Alan. I mean, that really sums it up. That's a very, very good word. And honestly, if we don't get some of these vaccine things stopped, I just got a pleading letter from someone, email from someone today about what's going on in California, saying that if they have their way, California will turn into the next West Virginia and Mississippi, where there are no exemptions. There are only medical exemptions, very hard to get. They have millions of unvaccinated kids out there that are going to go to school this fall and not be able to file an exemption. And then what's going to happen? You know, they're going to how many vaccines are they going to have to get before they cross the door of a publicly funded education? So it's a very dark industry. It's very dark. I just wrote a big article. It took me 2 days to write it. It's going to be posted out tomorrow about the Healthy People 2020 and the decade of vaccines. And I pulled out a lot of information that you're not going to read anywhere else about what is really behind this. And there was a good article posted today on GreedMedInfo that talked about this whole organization called NACHO or something like that, that is the Federation of State and Local Public Health and Communities. And there are supposedly 2,700 members in this organization, and they got $25 million of funding from the CDC to push forward an agenda that is literally cradle-to-grave vaccination. And they have a letter with that written right in it to show that that's what their agenda is.
And yeah, so cradle-to-grave.
Yeah, literally, cradle-to-grave, which may be in about 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. They're shortening that phrase has a different meaning when you add, you know, lifelong vaccines to it. You know, it's just not the same span that phrase originally meant. Sherry, where can people find this article of yours? Where can we get the article?
Well, it's going to be posted out tomorrow. It'll be on drtenpenny.com, and it will go up on Facebook. It's at drtenpenny.com under the tab that says articles. And there's another article that I put up yesterday under the blog tab on drtenpenny.com. And the title of the article is, Your Doctors Are Required to Give Your Medical Information to the Government. And it talks about electronic health records and the new things that they talk about called medical use or appropriate use, you know, of the medical records. And part of it is a reporting system that you have to report cholesterol, and you have to report height, weight, obesity, and vaccination records. And all of those things are now going into stage two. So on the stage two of what those requirements are, if the doctors don't report these things and hospitals don't report them, they are going to be getting anywhere between 1% and 5% of their Medicaid or Medicare reimbursements taken away from them for lack of reporting. So all these electronic medical records are, every time you go to the doctor and the doctor types all this stuff into the medical records, it's become a huge data collection area so that they can get all this information back on everybody through this whole thing called meaningful use. The blog post is up there. I posted it up yesterday. It's going to go out widely tomorrow, and it's called Doctors Are Required to Give Your Information to Government. If you go to drtenpenny.com and you click on the blog tab at the top, you could read that. And then there's another article that I wrote that is Healthy People 2020 and the Decades of Vaccines, and it is under the articles tab, and it'll go out in a couple of days. And the information that's in there is pretty shocking.
Wow. Well, we'll definitely look for that, Sherry. Thank you so much for, boy, you are a meticulous researcher. I've always really appreciated that in you, and it sounds like you're keeping to that standard again with these articles. Really looking forward to seeing them. Let's go ahead and take a quick break here. We're at the halfway point. You've been listening to the Know Your Rights Hour, and we've got another half an hour to go, so please stay with us. We have at least one caller on the phones. Be patient. We'll get to you shortly. And we will be back with you in just a couple of minutes.
Emergency room visits are skyrocketing from the use of dangerous energy drinks. Are you next in line, suffering from fatigue, tiredness, or seeking peak performance? Real energy. Real. My fatigue was obliterated with a groundbreaking new product called Ultra Rush. I feel the rush, and the best part is I've got real energy for peak performance. Ultra Rush cracked the code to energy. Recently published studies show that ingredients found together only in Ultra Rush increased energy an average of 45% in patients with chronic fatigue, and athletes experienced a 40% increase in stamina. Now that's energy. Visit AlterRush.com, AlterRush.com, AlterRush.com. Free trial samples are available for a limited time. Get moving again with Ultra Rush, AlterRush.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. Not intended to treat, diagnose, prevent, or cure disease. Results may vary.
The Natural News Store is now open. Hi, this is Joni Cox with Homegrown Health with some great news for your health and your budget. Visit shopnaturalnews.com to start saving money right now on superfoods like cacao, camu camu, and acai. You'll find coconut flour, coconut sugar, and hemp seeds, as well as detox products like Zeotrex, Oxy Powder, and Nascent Iodine. You'll also find survival organic food supplies and colloidal silver. Both can help you prepare for natural disasters or other events that might threaten your health or safety. As Hurricane Sandy recently taught America, just one storm can knock out the power grid and leave us all scrambling for food and medicine. We've also got amazing herbal medicine cabinets and herbal survival kits. Plus, we're the exclusive source for the all-new Natural Attitude Turmeric Extract. It's a powerful, alcohol-free, liquid form of turmeric with high absorbability. Plus, get free shipping in the USA on orders of $99 or more. A portion of all sales helps fund health freedom and food freedom initiatives. Find all this and much more at shopnaturalnews.com. That's shopnaturalnews.com.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WebSeed.com.
We are back with the Know Your Rights Hour. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, Attorney Alan Phillips. Just some real quick announcements here, and we'll jump back into the thick of it. Dr. Tenpenny has, I tell you, three or four websites here. They're all worth going to. drtenpenny.com. drtenpenny.com. There will be a test, so write all this down. tenpennyimc.com. tenpennyimc.com. My personal favorite, vaccineresearchlibrary.com. vaccineresearchlibrary.com. And a new site, Edgy Truth, EDGY, edgytruth.com. Sherry, you're just a powerhouse of information and activity. Boy, it's terrific. You can subscribe to the Vaccine Rights e-newsletter at the Vaccine Rights website. That's vaccinerights.com. And on Tuesday evenings, right here on blogtalkradio.com, the Vaccine Agenda Internet Radio Show, hosted by yours truly, and we get into more information about your rights and more of the vaccine controversy there on Tuesday nights as well, so please join us there. Let's see. Sherry, one other quick thing, if I can hog the microphone for just a few more seconds here. I wanted to let people know that, first of all, some of the bills and the current versions of bills, because bills, the wording can change as the bill goes through its process and either dies or gets voted on and either passes or doesn't. But some of the bills around the country to restrict access to religious exemptions are unconstitutional. And the practical reality is that legislatures can pass any law they get the votes for, whether it's constitutional or not, but it may still be helpful to let them know when a bill they are considering will not pass constitutional scrutiny. So I've done some constitutional analyses, and if you're in, for example, Texas and Illinois, I've done write-ups for both of those, why the current versions of those bills are unconstitutional with respect to religious exemptions. So I've got links to those at the top of the or near the top of the vaccinerights.com website. So if you're in one of those states, check out those documents. That's something you can pass along to a state representative to let them know that they shouldn't pass the bill for whatever other reasons you might want to add to it, because the current version is unconstitutional. So there's legal arguments there that might help you persuade a legislator. And if you are in a different state and you're not sure whether there's something there that a legal argument might be helpful, feel free to email me and I'll take a look at it. That's attorney@vaccinerights.com. Well, Sherry, we got at least one other caller on the line here. Was there anything you wanted to get into first, or shall we go ahead and go to the next caller?
Let's go to the caller. I think that would be good.
Okay, somebody who's been waiting very patiently, area code 347.
Hi, Alan. Hello, Sherry.
Good evening.
Hey, how are you
this evening? I'm fine. We all miss Dr. Mayer, but his flame will be carried on forever. Am I glad, Sherry, that you were threatened with these bomb threats in Australia? Could you imagine if they wouldn't have threatened you, just acted on it without warning?
Yeah, I suppose. I guess, you know, I guess it's always good to look at the look for the gold in everything, right?
Sorry? Silver lining of every cloud.
Yeah.
It definitely drew more attention to what fight we are in. And people sitting on the fence, imagining that we're dealing with, we are the lunatics against a civilized society, started to open their eyes and see that it's the other way around.
It's a little hard to hear you. There's a bit of a reverb.
Sorry.
People
who are sitting on the fence and were thinking whether we are a little bit extreme dealing against the rest of civilized society, now begin to see that we are the civil ones acting against very uncivil activists.
Well,
yes,
it's a real interesting play, because of course they always characterize us as being the crazy ones, and when that comes from positions of authority, it carries a lot of weight with a lot of people. And so, you know, in that respect, I think we've got an uphill battle. But, you know, what is amazing to me is that despite the advantages that, Sherry, you listed off earlier in the show, and the, you know, control of the mainstream media and these positions of authority and so forth, that we are nevertheless growing in numbers. That's got to make them at least a little bit nervous to see that despite their aggressive efforts, that there's and their substantial advantages in the ways that they have that, that nonetheless there are more and more people. I mean, I don't think they'd be making this same aggressive push right now legislatively around the country if they were already getting what they wanted without having to do that, you know. And so there are more and more people who are asking questions and who are looking at or exercising exemptions. And you know, if they are nervous, they are still rolling forward with a certain with a threatening level of what they're doing is not something that we can just shrug off and laugh at. I mean, they're exercising their might here, and it has yet to be seen how the legislative game is going to play out over the next few months. But it's definitely something we need to be concerned about. But at the same time, if we weren't a threat to them at some level or some degree or some way, I don't think they would feel the need to do what they're doing here. So in a maybe glass half full, half empty sort of way, I think there's a silver lining to this. It's every bit as much an opportunity for us to coordinate, organize, and turn this ship around facing the other direction as it is a threat to us that we're going to lose even what little rights we already have. So it's definitely a pivotal time, but the pivot has not, you know, we don't know, the fat lady hasn't sung, as the expression goes. You know, the jury is still out. We don't know what the outcome is going to be yet, and I think we have a chance. And I think what Sherry was talking about earlier, how do we do this intelligently, effectively? You know, we have to educate ourselves not only about the issue, but about the legislative process as well. So, but if we do that, we have a chance here to make a difference.
This is our D-Day.
It feels like it. You know, I found myself in recent days thinking the phrase French underground, you know, has been coming to mind for me. I feel like, you know, we're getting more and more to a place where, you know, as Sherry has so effectively and with just profound relevance said, in reference to people who say they're afraid to speak out. And I don't blame somebody for being afraid to speak out, but we need to put that aside right now, because it's not going to get easier to speak out if we wait and put that off. You know,
well,
it'll only get harder
to speak out. But even if you're afraid to speak out, you should be even more afraid not to speak out.
Yes.
Exactly.
That's what I was trying
to
say.
I agree with you. You should be afraid to speak out, but even more afraid not to.
Yeah, and you know, when somebody says to me they're afraid to speak out, you know, my response is, I understand that, but, you know, if you don't do it now, when are you going to do it? You know, we've got to do it now. And nobody wants to be a martyr, and I certainly don't want to be, but, you know, it's when we keep quiet that they get to keep rolling their agenda forward. So, and each one of us who speaks out makes it a little safer for the next one who is afraid to speak out to join us. So the more of us that speak out, the more who will feel empowered, who will join us. I really believe that's the case. And it's something that's necessarily the case if we're going to be able to turn this around backwards. Because I don't think it's impossible to sway a legislator just on education, but I think that would be the rare exception. I think the things that Sherry was talking about earlier in the show are absolutely right. You've got to be relevant to the person you're talking to, because you vote for them and you know other people who vote for them. And this is maybe the power of organizations. When you can go to somebody representing an organization or a group of some kind, you can say, I'm not here alone. You know, there's 500 other people in the room with me, figuratively speaking, but their votes are not figurative. So these are the, you know, all different things we can think about. But even if you can do nothing else, show up by yourself, because don't not speak up because you don't have a friend or doctor or attorney or group to go with you. Every voice counts. And I had an experience once myself where all I did was send a letter with somebody else to a hearing, and I stopped a bill. And the senator called me up and came to my office to say, what do we need to do to get you on board? So you never know what one person can do, you know, so don't not speak out because you're only one person. But if you can go beyond that and educate yourself and learn about effective ways or ways to be more effective, of course, all the better.
Well, Alan, one of the things that they said to me is that they said at that training that I was talking about at the beginning of the hour with the Foundation for Conservative Leadership is they advised against trying to educate politicians. He said it's a lost cause, and because politicians can always out-politic you, that they can not appropriately. And he told a story about how he went there with some of the people in his group, and they went there to talk about their cause and to tell the politician about what their position was. And the politician was nodding appropriately, saying, yes, I understand. You know, it's really difficult. And you know, you kind of have to be reasonable on these things. And he said, and the whole time, he said, I was sitting there thinking, he is pulling a fast one. He's doing all of these things about ignoring you and then whining and all this other stuff. And he said, and when we walked out of the room, he said, the other three people that were with me said, wow, he's such a nice guy. Maybe we should get him to run for governor the next time. And so, he said, and that wasn't the response that he wanted. And what he was really talking about was going in with a demand, not with an ask, and to go in with a purpose to say, this is what I want you to do, and this is why, and if you're not going to do it, I'm going to induce pain. And the pain can mean angry voters and people that, you know, he said, really, you can either go in from a position of access, meaning you go in with hat in hand and try to get them to vote your way, or you can go in understanding the politics and go in from a position of power.
Well, Sherry, there's certainly merit in what you're saying, and I guess my response to that is there's probably not a one-size-fits-all here, that politicians are different. You know, newer ones might be more receptive to education than the seasoned ones who are more fully and deeply entrenched in the political games. And it may just vary on, you know, a combination of different factors. But it's absolutely, you know, we need the feedback from people who have been there and what they have experienced. And so if that's what somebody has experienced, then I consider that, you know, valid, useful information. So I'm really glad to hear you share that. Well, we got a couple other.
Well, why don't we move on? Because it's a little
ahead,
hard
Sherry.
To hear. I was going to say, why don't we move on? Because it's a little hard to hear with the background noise. So.
Yeah, let's. We've got a caller at area code 215. You're on the air.
Oh, hello. Thanks for taking the call. Hello. I was just wondering, is there any point, do you think, in trying to influence the pediatricians? I think that would have a really powerful stand. And, I mean, that's really the big argument seems to be, you know, the pediatricians all, and I know you talked about it earlier, they're all kind of in unison. And I kind of get why they kind of have to not speak out against vaccines, and the pediatricians that I have encountered all seem to really do believe that the vaccines are necessary. I don't think they're just kind of saying that. I don't know if there's a psychological thing going on where they can't really face, I mean, really, what would they do if they didn't believe in vaccines? It would kind of be the end of their career, and they just can't face that. But at the same time, it would be, and they probably know it. At the same time, I have gotten misinformation from just about every pediatrician that I've spoken to. And I am not sure if they were, if they didn't know the answer and they were just trying to look confident and they just said anything, or if they were consciously lying about it because they were, you know, not giving me a truthful answer, or if they really just didn't, are ignorant and thought they were saying the right thing. I mean, one pediatrician.
I would vote for the last thing you just said. vote for the last thing. Yeah. They were ignorant. They haven't, most of them haven't gone so far as to read a package insert, let alone anything much beyond that. And so they're just trying to tell you what they think is right based on an assumption for which they know nothing. It used to make me so angry. It still does.
It does, Cleveland Clinic. Yeah.
They can say bad things about alternative or integrative medicine. And it never ceases to amaze me how they can be experts in something they know nothing about.
Mm-hmm.
And I wager to say that the vast majority of pediatricians, and I hate sweeping generalizations, but I think the vast majority of them, when you really push them about vaccines, they will parrot the same 10 sentences over and over again because that's all they know.
Yeah. That's been my experience.
And I would go a step further and say, Sherry, I think people who are speaking, especially when they're emotional or condescending about opposing views, that when they are speaking about things that they don't really know anything about, that's a symptom of mental programming or a propaganda technique. And you tell me, Sherry, because you're the doctor here, but my understanding, you know, from some of the ones I've talked to and heard from, and sometimes they'll even admit it, as an earlier caller said, the doctor says, well, we weren't really taught much about vaccines in medical school, but they show them pictures of children dying from these diseases, and I see that as a form of emotional conditioning or programming. And because it's interesting to me that doctors can be perfectly professional on just about anything, and then you talk about vaccines, and they'll get very emotional and condescending and so forth. And I see this in other areas, controversial topics, where somebody comes forth with an alternative view, and sometimes there's this knee-jerk reaction to be self-righteous and condescending because you're crazy, you're one of those crazy people, you believe in this or that or whatever it is. And it often comes from people, when you question them, that they don't really know anything about it. They're just going by what somebody else told them. I don't think that's an accident. I think it's deliberate. I think it's one of the ways that government or other people in control, it's a propaganda technique for controlling our thinking. And I think it's something that is done emotionally. While ultimately the vaccine issue is a question of the science, it is what are the real facts. If you can, you control people through their emotions. And if you show doctors or medical students, for example, these horrible pictures of children dying from diseases, and then you're telling them everybody needs to get vaccines so this doesn't happen, and if that's basically, you know, sums up the information that they get, they're not operating on information, they're operating on emotions, and yet they somehow think they're operating on information, or they have minimal information enough for them to think that it's real information when it really is very superficial and as we know, skewed or erroneous at times. But anyway, that's my read on things at this point. We maybe have time to get in one other caller, or did the caller, was there anything else you had you wanted to throw in there?
No, that answered. I it's one of the more frustrating things for me is the pediatricians, because I feel like if they're reasonable people, they don't necessarily are financially, I mean, I guess they are to some degree, but just if they would speak out, if they could somehow get themselves together and as a group speak out so they're not feeling individually threatened.
When you get a chance, go to my drtenpenny.com site, drtenpenny, and read the new blog post that I put up there. Read the blog, and you'll understand a little bit more why doctors kick out patients that don't have that aren't going to vaccinate, and why they're never going to change their mind.
Oh, interesting. Okay, I'll do that.
Well, thanks for the call.
Okay,
I think the caller, you know, speaks about a hypothetical ideal, but I agree with you, Sherry, that I think it's really difficult. You know, one of my favorite bumper stickers of all time was one that said, "When the people lead, the leaders will follow." And while as a culture we look up to doctors as leaders, I think on this issue they will follow where the crowd goes when everybody else has left them. They're not going to figure it out and then lead the way. That's what I think is likely to happen. I'm proved wrong.
But I totally agree.
I really don't think so.
I totally agree.
Yeah, thank you, Sherry. We have another caller, area code 812. We've got just a few minutes left here. What can we have a question or comment for us?
Yeah, Alan, this is Jody Coker.
Here we go.
I was going to ask you about the Indiana, where I live. They just voted down one of the bills that was on the NVIC.org, which had to do with giving Gardasil to boys. And the other part of that was they were wanting to move the vaccination part of the Indiana Code from the education part of the Indiana Code over to the health part of the Indiana Code. Can you explain to me, you know, why they were wanting to do that? It got voted down, but I have a feeling that there were other motives why they were moving it from the education part of the Indiana Code over to the health and safety part of the Indiana Code. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I could only speculate on that and just give a real general comment that every state organizes their laws differently, and the vaccine laws are sort of interesting. Historically, they came up in the context of children going to school, so often the vaccine requirements and exemptions are part of the education code. But, of course, it's also a health issue, so many times it's part of the health code, and it's even in both codes in some states. I know that at least used to be the way in Texas is one that comes to mind. So it's just different. Every state organizes their laws differently, but I could see wanting to put it in the education code because there is some efforts now. This just happened in West Virginia, if I understand correctly. They actually had a bill there to introduce religious exemption, and the last word I heard about that just in the last couple of days is they have now taken out the part that has anything to do with religious exemption, but they've rewritten the bill to give more sweeping authority to the health department for the health department to be able to add vaccines or change the schedule or do anything they want to with it without having to go through the legislature. Now, the legislatures have authority to delegate authority. And again, the way that works is just different in every state depending on each state's laws. But in many states, health departments have the authority to act on their own. And this is something we should be concerned about because these are not elected officials. So the more of it that goes through the legislature, where we have at least an indirect voice, but a more direct indirect voice than we do directly, you know, with health departments too. And I think there was something going on in an Illinois bill as well that was looking to give more power to health departments. It seems to be part of the legislative activity nationally to move more authority to health departments. And boy, with the thing that Sherry was talking about earlier, the NACHA, the National Association of County and City Health Authorities, and all this money they're getting from the CDC, and there was a big chunk of change also from the Department of Health and Human Services. So they're getting all this federal money, and you know who runs those federal health agencies? It's the pharmaceutical industry. So it looks to me, I'm speculating here, but it's not a left field. It looks to me like a movement to enable the federal authorities to have more direct influence and push over state policy and law, or the pharmaceutical industry perhaps, to more directly influence. Because, see, the problem here is that the federal government does not have authority to mandate vaccines for state residents directly. So the more that they can influence that process, and there are many ways they can do that, it looks to me like it's a multi-pronged strategy on the pharmaceutical industry to use it's got greater control at the federal level than it does at the state level. And while that doesn't give them the ability to directly mandate vaccines, the more ways that they can wield that federal level power to control or influence what goes on at the state level, they might as well have the authority to mandate. You know, it's like a smaller and smaller step away. So it looks to me as part of a larger strategy just to control who has to get how many vaccines and so forth.
Okay. And just real quick, Dr. Tenpenny, earlier on this program, you mentioned about not going after your representative and trying to persuade them that we should – you said something about going from a position of power, but I guess my question is, should we not go in there? I mean, my thoughts are going in there with kind of like bullet points and saying, you know, like bam, 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 these are the reasons why. But are you saying not to go there and try to convince them?
Well, what the leadership would say, from what I learned from that, from the Foundation of Conservative Leadership, was what they were advocating was that if you want them to vote yes on a bill, that you go in and you say to them, "I want you to vote yes on the bill, and here's the three reasons why," just three bullet-pointed reasons, because they have attention span of a gnat, and so. And that you are going there to train them to vote yes on the bill that you want them to vote on, or no, however you want it to be. And that you go in from a position of telling them what you want them to do rather than going in and asking them to vote your way. He said, you know, everybody wants to go in and be really polite, and, you know, somehow we put these legislators up on some sort of a pedestal. He said, but if you want to be effective, you go in from a position of power.
Okay.
I'll
leave
terrific.
You all with one.
We're actually out of time.
Thing.
We've got to run.
I'm sorry.
So sorry to have to cut you short, but no, it's all right. I apologize, but we gotta close.
You all
out
have
here.
A wonderful evening.
So,
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Too.
Bye bye.
We've got to run, Sherry. We're out of time here. You've been listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny and vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips. We're here every Monday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, and we're rebroadcast at naturalnewsradio.com Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern and 10 a.m. Pacific. We'll see you next week, folks.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destinies. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destinies. For we must be the masters of our destinies.
for we must be the masters of our destiny.